Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. And today, I have one of my favorite people to talk about Star Trek with, and one of my favorite people on the internet. It is Jason Snell. I almost forgot your name halfway through saying that. Which
it's perhaps, like a cliffhanger.
That's right.
Bateman? Patrick?
Which Jason?
Bourne?
I don't know.
It's good to be back. It's good to be back for my third. This is my third randomly selected episode. I was also on the only movie episode so far.
Yes.
So it's good. I'm back, and I drew a. I always wonder what the random thing is going to do, and it gave us a really interesting choice here, didn't it?
It did. Well, we'll just say what we watched, which is a Voyager episode, an episode of Voyager that neither of us had seen before.
Well, you see, it's a seventh season of Voyager, and I had stopped watching Voyager by this point.
I had also stopped watching Voyager, and I have kind of filled in the gaps a little bit, but not completely. So there are many episodes of Voyager that I have not seen. People out there now are gasping.
I know. Because I couldn't believe it that you and I, longtime Star Trek fans, neither of us has seen this episode, which, a very smart person, one person on Twitter guessed it. They're like, it's probably like late Voyager. Like, yeah.
That's yes. And I will say right now that there are many episodes of Star Trek that I have not seen. Many episodes of Enterprise, although there are less episodes of Enterprise. I have not seen them. So send me
there's some Deep Space Nine I haven't seen. You know?
Well, that's just not right, Jason.
I know. One of these days.
You'll get to it. I'm sure you're looking for things to watch, but
it's not going anywhere.
No, it may be going off streaming. Who knows? I'm starting that rumor. I don't actually know if it is or not.
All right. We'll see.
But CBS has its own streaming service now, so maybe they'll pull it off everything else.
It's possible.
But the episode that we watched today is available currently on many streaming platforms, including CBS All Access. It is the fifth episode of the seventh season of Voyager, Critical Care. And Jason and I were both excited because it is a doctor-centric episode.
Yeah, for all of our shock that it's an episode we haven't seen and that it's a seventh-season Voyager episode, it's a doctor episode. And I felt like it was going to be okay because I was going to get a lot of Robert Picardo.
That's right. Although Joe Rosensteel, apparently not a fan of this episode.
Yeah. Well, Joe, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I maybe the bar is set so low when I think of a seven-season Voyager episode, but not to spoil anything here, but I thought it was fine. I thought it was a perfectly fine. I mean, I sort of knew what was going to happen, but I thought it was a pretty good episode, taken just completely randomly out of context. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, that Joe is what I like to call a prickly pear.
He's a bit of a negative Nelly.
He is. But we love him too, Joe. I know you may be listening. So don't get upset. But I also thought this episode was fine. I like Robert Picardo, as you just said.
Yeah.
So anytime he's doing his thing, I will watch.
Did I tell you?
No.
About the time that I helped Robert Picardo find the tortillas at the taco bar?
You did not. Did you say, please state the taco bar emergency?
Please state the nature of your Mexican food emergency. No, I went on a Mac cruise when Mackerel was hosting the Mac cruises in the Baltic Sea, and it was a huge ship, and they have other events on there. And the guy who ran the Mac cruises was a friend with a guy who ran the Star Trek cruises.
Oh.
And it was both a Star Trek cruise and a Mac cruise. And the highlight of that in terms of Star Trek interaction, I did a couple of that. So like, you know, Mr. Sulu admired my daughter when she was a baby. He was like, "It's a beautiful baby." And it's like, thank you, Mr. Sulu.
George.
It's George Takei. Yes. I didn't actually, I just said thank you. He knew who he was and I knew who he was. So it was fine. But I'm at the taco bar making myself like a burrito or something. And I finished and I turn and Robert Picardo is standing there looking kind of flummoxed. And he looks at me and he says, "Do you know where the tortillas are?" And to be fair to Robert Picardo, they were rolled up in little like aluminum foil sleeves, rolled up in a little steamer basket.
That's true.
So you would never, from the shape, you would never assume that those were tortillas. And I said, "It's those funny things wrapped up down there." And he was like, "Thank you." And that was my entire Robert Picardo story.
You should have said, "They're space tortillas." That sounds like something they would have done.
I have been dining out on telling Robert Picardo where the tortillas are ever since.
That's a good story. I have no Robert Picardo interactions. You made me think if I've ever interacted with any Star Trek people, and the answer is I have not.
Huh, interesting. Well, it's the Star Trek Cruise thing that did it, where that was George Takei and Chase Masterson. Oh. And there was a luau the night before, and we went to the luau, and it was a Hawaii cruise, and it was George Takei, Chase Masterson, and the guy who plays Admiral Forrest, Von Armstrong, who I found out later is from my hometown. He grew up in my hometown, a little town, and if I had known, I would have been like, oh my God, Rob, we're from Sonora, but I didn't. So I've got one other connection to this episode, Scott. I know it's shocking.
I am shocked at the level of Snell-centric tidbits are in this episode.
This episode was written by James Caan, who I have met and who lived for a time in my hometown of Sonora, California.
This is crazy.
And the story here is James Caan, not to be confused with James Caan, the actor. This is James Caan, K-A-H-N, so also not like Caan. Or James Caan. This is another James and another Caan.
It's very confusing.
He was a doctor and a sort of a would-be writer. And at some point in, we mentioned this on the Incomparables E.T. episode, at some point in the shooting of E.T., what Steven Spielberg wanted in the scenes where the doctors are trying to save E.T., when the spoilers for E.T., by the way. he got actual doctors.
I just watched E.T. like 3 days ago.
All right. Well, so you know, there's a scene where there's a whole medical team trying to save him. And they got real doctors from, I think, USC Medical Center or something to do that. Well, one of the doctors in that scene is James Caan. And one of the things he did was basically that famous thing that people who have a screenplay do, which is say, I'm a writer. I wrote a novel. He had published a few novels. And he got the novelization of Poltergeist out of it. Like, they said, you can write the novelization of Poltergeist. He went on to write the novelization of, I think, Return of the Jedi. One of the Star Wars movies, at least, he wrote the novelization of. And then he also went on to write a lot for television, including being on the staff of Voyager for at least this season. I believe he's listed as like a consulting producer, which I think means he was on the writing staff, and he wrote this episode. But he did live in the foothills of Northern California in the 80s, and after he had written those novelizations, but before he seemed to get back into being a more active TV screenwriter. And I met him one day at a book signing where he and a science fiction author named James P. Hogan, who also lived in my town, they were signing their books there. And I went for James P. Hogan, and then I met James Caan. So he wrote this episode, and when his credit came up, I was like, no way. I had to look it up. Yep. It's that guy. I know that guy.
It's that guy.
And what a story is that, to be from like being an ET and saying, I'd like to write things, to getting a whole writing career out of it, of first novelizations and then TV screenplays.
It's impressive. Yeah.
But you can see he is bringing his medical knowledge to bear. As a doctor, he actually is writing about medical stuff. So that brings it all back together. That's what critical care is about.
Well, there you go. And I will say that I am always annoyed when doctors become successful writers, because I feel like, can't you just be a doctor?
Leave some for the rest of us.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I must do more.
The doctors are saying, no, thank goodness there's room for another doctor now.
That's true. And as we learn in critical care, doctors are important. Or you need yourself an allocator who will then decide who lives or dies based on your societal import, which seems... You know, not to get too political, but this seems a little bit like the current healthcare in America.
It's very hard. I mean, I would recommend for people, I don't know how many people watch the episode before they listen to a Random Trek episode, but I think anybody who is listening to this podcast in 2017, you might want to watch this episode, because it feels incredibly trenchant, incredibly appropriate for our era, because it is all about access to healthcare. Like, that is what this episode is about. It's kind of amazing. It's kind of mind-blowing.
It is. And I have a couple of years ago, my mother was diagnosed with cancer, and sadly she passed away. But I tell that not because it's sad, but because I spent a lot of time in hospitals for a period of time visiting her and doing all kinds of things. And so it was very interesting Before that, I, of course, had been to hospitals to visit friends or relatives who were sick, but I had never spent as much time as I had over the course of that year.
Right. And I had a period of about 2 or 3 years where my dad was hospitalized three times, and he also passed away eventually. And my mom was hospitalized in a little wedge of time when my dad was and she was.
Oh, man.
So I also spent a lot of time in hospitals, and I was thinking about that as I watched this episode too.
And it's hard not to think, because my mom was, I'm in Philadelphia. She moved to Philadelphia. She was in Pennsylvania Hospital, which is a fine hospital. But they are doing what a lot of hospitals are doing and creating special areas for people. It's at Pennsylvania Hospital, it's called the Pavilion, and it's for rich people who want to pay extra money, and they get their own private suites. They get different food. They get to eat off of real plates. Your relatives can, like, there's an extra room where people can hang out and go to sleep and stuff. And that, I couldn't help but think of that while watching Critical Care, because...
Yeah, it sounds like a real Level Blue.
It was a Level Blue. I don't think it was quite as bad as Level Blue, where they were just having people who wanted to, freshen up their arteries.
Yeah, right.
But,
Level Blue is like the LA skincare clinic, right? It's your plastic surgery clinic.
Yes. You want to increase your, but it was impressive that this drug can increase your lifespan by 40%. That's or 60%.
Pretty good.
One or the other. I'd like it. Although I feel
cure a deadly illness.
That's right. You have to choose, and there's only so much of it apparently, because the allocator says so. So this episode, the basic point is the doctor gets stolen by this guy named Gar. For whatever reason.
Oh, he's a lovable rogue.
Gar. Is he though? He's
a
rogue.
We're told there's a scene. There's a hilarious scene where Janeway is on the phone with various people at this asteroid who have come into contact with Gar. And first it's Jerry from Parks and Recreation, Jim O'Hare. That killed me. As the husband.
He's playing the same character as
Parks.
He's
a hapless regular guy, and then they call his ex-wife, and she says, did you, to Janeway, she's like, you're a woman, did you see him? Gar is so exciting. And I thought to myself, is Gar really that exciting? But apparently compared to Jim O'Hare, compared to poor Jerry from Parks and Rec, Gar is more exciting.
Gar's a hot catch. And that's a funny scene in that Janeway's like, oh no, I already have a man, and grabs Chakotay, and everyone's like, what?
Yeah, that's wacky. Yeah, because the wife and the / girlfriend is like, first she's like, are you trying to steal my man? And then she says, no, he's a jerk. And she's like, how dare you? I love him. And she says, no, it's not that. Quick, Tuvok, give me your hand. No, we're together now, and so I do not need a man. Please tell me where he is, right? It's played for laughs. It's a pretty funny scene.
Yes. And this is yet another episode in which I think Tuvok, not so great at his job. And I like Tuvok.
Yeah.
But apparently Gar could steal an incredibly important part of the ship without anyone noticing.
Yeah, he steals the mobile emitter, and that we learn this sort of after the fact, because the first scene we get is the doctor kind of in this environment we've never seen before with all these sick people, and he's been stolen. But then it backs up and we discover that basically there's some trader who they get on board to trade some stuff for some other stuff, and he fakes being having food poisoning, which you got to think is pretty common because Neelix is cooking.
Yeah,
right. And then he just hangs out in sick base until he can steal the doctor.
And I did like when Janeway, they're explaining this to Janeway, and she's like, well, I'm sure the doctor wouldn't shut up about his holo emitter.
Yeah, well, I like that Neelix, or Noah, the Tuvok basically says, I take full responsibility for this. It's like, well, yeah, really.
It is your fault, Tuvok. But then Janeway, I think, I give Voyager a lot of flack for not being my favorite Star Trek. Although Janeway is advancing in the ranks of my favorite Star Trek captains. And I feel like she exhibited great leadership when she was like, I don't care whose fault it is. I just want to know how he did it and how we could find the doctor. I want solutions, people.
Not to derail the plot summary even further, but
please do.
I have some issues with the Doctor. I think he's a great character.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy Robert Picardo in this role. I like how they play in this episode. They play against his programming. I mean, first off, at one point we get to see a deprogrammed doctor backup file that's running in sick bay at the beginning. And all he can say is, please state the nature of the medical emergency. So I like that. And they say, well, you know, you're a program, but he's complaining and stuff. But let's be honest, the producers here really wanted to use him in other interesting ways. So they give him this mobile emitter, which is basically like, is he a robot at that point? I don't want to get into the debate about it,
It's
like, then he's like, what is he? Is he a little floating thing that emits a hologram?
Well, I've teleconferenced John Syracuse in here, so he could tell.
So that's just a cheat and it bugs me, but it's just part of the premise and I have to go with it. The doctor is a hologram and he's a computer program, but he can touch things and go anywhere. Right. Well, and we just have to accept that.
He's a hologram made of hard light, I think they have explained. So he can do stuff.
Yeah. So that's okay. I'll take it. But in this episode, I had the other thing on top of it, which really bugs me about it. And we see it in this episode and we also see it in the episode where they beam him by subspace radio back to Barclay.
To Barclay, sure.
And in that episode, like this one, I have this moment of like, the doctor is Data. He's not Mr. Data. he is a program saved on a hard drive, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that why would you steal him? Stealing him must involve like copying his program and then erasing.
Yeah.
It's like holding down the command key when you move a file on the Mac, right? You want to move it, not copy it. You want to move it. And I just don't understand that. Like, I guess they don't want to deal with the existential questions of what if there are, you know, two different copies of the doctor running separately. But I had that moment in this episode where I thought they're going to go back to the Voyager and the doctor's not going to be there. And in fact, it's like he's got a backup running. But it frustrates me that he's a computer program. You would just copy him and take him away. And the traitor guy, I mean, maybe there's only one hollow emitter, but he could like keep that software around and sell a copy of the doctor everywhere. But instead, they treat it like the doctor is a physical object who can only be taken and not copied. And he's not. He's a computer program. So that drives me nuts. And so I kept thinking about that in this episode, too, that it would be more interesting if we cut back to Voyager and it turned out that the doctor was still there. And with something else that leads them this chase, or did they do an episode of Voyager where there's a copy of him that just goes on forever somewhere else?
I'm sure they did. They did an episode where he basically argues for his humanity or his sentience. No, I don't want to be human centric.
Right.
And they show at the end there are a bunch of doctors. And they're all toiling away in some mine somewhere because they're not fit to be doctors.
Right.
But it's unclear to me if they are sentient or not, because at some point he gains sentience.
Right, right.
So, but
anyway, it's just one of those things that, like, if he's data on a hard drive, then I don't understand why you stealing him. I mean, I could get stealing his emitter. But, like, shouldn't he also still be in the Voyager computer? But he's not. I don't know. It's
and
weird.
Since I hadn't seen this episode, I thought at first that's exactly what happened. And I thought it was interesting because they hadn't done that before. Because, like you said, he wakes up on this weird place that we don't know anything about. It's clearly not Voyager. But then we cut to Tom and Harry Kim in, like, billowing hockey gear. I don't quite understand what's going on there with that hockey gear. But they go into the sick bay, and you think, oh, the doctor's not going to be there. But he is there, and you think, ah, this is interesting. But no, it's just like a rudimentary program that can only – well, I guess it actually is the same. It's still an emergency medical hologram, but it doesn't have the sentience.
Yeah, I think they said it was from the testing phase or something. So basically, it's like it's a backup from before he became sentient.
Right, it's like a beta or something.
Right, but why would they not just have a backup? I mean, we tell people to back up their data, right? Why would you not? Since he is part of the data, why wouldn't you back him up? Like, in case something happens, you just have another, you just bring him back.
Well, as I've watched a lot of random episodes of Star Trek over the years, and with a critical eye towards data security and information technology practices, and I've got to say, Starfleet has a poor record, and I'm pretty sure they don't back up anything. So
fair point.
And plus, as Monty Ashley always says, he's not sure if any of the writers of Star Trek have ever used a computer or understand how they work. So.
Good point. Solid point.
I think that might be. But this is also a classic Star Trek trope, is the center of this episode. There is a computer that is telling people what to do.
Mm-hmm. The allocator.
The allocator decides who is worthy of just, I was going to say extreme measures, but not even extreme measures, just medical attention, and who is not. And I guess they also, it also tells people where to go.
It's the death panel of this planet.
It's the automated death panel that I assume, now I may have blacked out at some point during this episode because I don't understand. I have pieced together, and I'm not sure if they actually say this, but I guess this hospital ship roams around the galaxy and has just kind of been contracted at this planet to dispense medical help.
That happens really early on. I was taking it to mean that the ship is in orbit around this planet, and it's and that's where it's stationed, and that they take people up there who are injured. But I don't know. I think they gloss over that really fast. There may be an answer, but I also was not entirely clear about it because I think they blow right through that very, very quickly. Right.
They're not too concerned about that part of it, but I thought it was interesting because that made me think there's this whole company that probably just has like this private healthcare company that has fleets of these hospital ships that they send out to societies that are too squeamish to make the hard choices. And they will, you know, scan your society, decide that irrigation apparently is the number one thing that you need in this society. People are crazy about irrigation because I think they mention it twice in this episode about irrigation engineers are important, which they are.
This planet that it's orbiting around has had some sort of an ecological disaster, and so they're trying to they have to prioritize their resources on this. Station and prioritize so that they can get the right people to help in the like building or maintenance of their culture, because their culture is falling apart. I think that's the premise here, and that's why they're under duress. That's why they can't give drugs to everybody and have to like prioritize who gets to be on the higher levels and who is not, which is that's the premise in a nutshell, is there are different levels of the hospital and everybody's got a score essentially. And, you know, and it's managed care. And I mean, knowing that this is written by somebody who knows about the medical industry, it's just, it's that much more interesting that what this is really about is kind of like the medical bureaucracy that tells you what you can and can't do with your patients. Mm-hmm. I mean, taking it out of the kind of what do we do about healthcare in the United States issue, which is hard not to watching it today. I think that's what it's about, is like there's some computer somewhere, like in real life, there's some computer somewhere that says you can't have that drug, or you can't, you know, or it's going to cost too much and you shouldn't perform this procedure, and that doctors chafe against it. And so in this case, you've got doctors, including Gregory Idson, who is usually a bad guy, and in this case he's like the doctor up in the fancy part. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Larry Drake, who's the administrator, and he runs the allocator, and he's the real bad guy because he's the bureaucrat who is in charge of enforcing basically what the computer tells you about whether you take care of people or not. And I thought that was interesting that they've got kind of this double villain thing, so that they can have the snotty hoity-toity doctor still kind of like get in touch with being a doctor and navigating the system in order to take care of his patients, which I think is absolutely part of the theme of this episode. I love that scene where the doctor says to Gregory Idson, well, but don't you understand? If you order more drugs now, then next month they will give you more drugs. If you have more patients next month, it's like budgeting 101, which is if you show that you aren't using half your budget, you won't get that budget next time. So you spend that money. And I like that the doctor is learning how to navigate the system, because ultimately, Gregory Idson's like lead doctor is a doctor and he does care about his patients. It's Larry Drake's character, the administrator, who does not care. He's an efficiency expert. He's been brought in to get this civilization and this hospital running smoothly. And if people have to die, let's make sure it's the bad people who die, the less important people.
We don't want to waste these expensive drugs on the kids who don't even know how to irrigate anything.
Well, it's more profitable to extend the lifespan of these special people here than it is to cure people of. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is the most extreme argument, right? It's like,
that's true.
Extend the lifespan of these old rich people, or save this person from a fatal disease who's dying down in the dirt.
Let them die. And you've got to imagine also that I've never worked in a hospital, but I assume that hospitals do have, in fact, administrators. And I can't imagine
absolutely
that the hospital administrators and the doctors always agree on the best courses of actions with budgets and with allocation of resources. And
yeah, well, and they have, like they have computer, there literally are computer programs that tell you like what you have to charge and what the right mm-hmm. thing is to do. And how long
you have to be somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Like what's your average? And I think that's all being critiqued by this episode, that James Caan knows very well, probably has friends as well as his experience in medicine and is getting it all out here. So I think it's rare that we see social commentary of this sort in Star Trek. It's not your usual social commentary. Although I would say today, if this episode aired, it would be considered quite controversial because this is a bigger issue now than it was then.
This would be like liberal propaganda because, you know, this is basically – the doctor basically comes on the side of universal healthcare. Everybody should be treated equally and, you know, everyone is should be – you shouldn't look at status or wealth as an indicator of who deserves treatment, but rather everyone should get treated single payer, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's right, although part of me thinks that there's probably an argument that somebody could make that this episode is also could be read as being critical to having a monolithic healthcare system.
That's true.
With specific rules that you could I think through another lens argue that this would say a national health service like in the UK mm-hmm. is bad because because with limited resources it's going to prioritize and it's going to get a bureaucracy and it's going to take the rules out of the hands of doctors. So I could see both sides here. I don't think that's what this episode is arguing, but I think that you could probably make that case if you wanted to.
Yes, that is true, and it is an interesting and compelling topic. Obviously, healthcare is a huge part of the economy, and it impacts everybody's lives. So it's interesting to see this when it was written. This our current political landscape was not the same, but healthcare was still a big deal because it always is. And this is kind of my favorite. This is Star Trek working on things that, you know, it's my favorite kind of Star Trek. It's talking about a big topic and a big issue, and it doesn't have any answers. It doesn't really satisfy anything, but it's broaching this subject and making you think about it. Because when you think about it, I of course think that everybody deserves access to healthcare, but then it is a limited resource. So how do you prioritize? I don't know. That's a difficult. I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, nobody really does. The my favorite thing in this episode is the premise, and so they turn on the hologram, right? They turn on the doctor. They're like, oh, he's well. First off, he refuses. Oh, you've kidnapped me. It's terrible. And then he sees hurt people, and he says, I need to help them. And this is the premise about the doctor is even though he's sentient, he and floating in a emitter, whatever. he's
a robot.
He is a doctor first, mm-hmm. and so therefore he's like any other doctor. He's a human being, basically. He's a person, a sentient life form, if you will, who is a doctor. And what is a doctor? Well, a doctor takes care of people. And then in this episode, you get that second layer, which is, yes, he will take care of somebody in front of him who's hurt. But being a doctor isn't just taking care of the patient in front of you. What this episode argues is being a doctor is taking care of people and making sure that people are taken care of and not being so focused on the one patient you've got, maybe the most profitable patient you've got, but thinking about the bigger picture of how many people can we save? How can we create an environment where people are allowed to be safe and healthy and live out their lives as long as is reasonable? And that's what I like that's what this episode really is saying is the doctor's scope gets really broad really fast on this hospital ship because he realizes that for him to truly serve his duty as a doctor, he needs to very Captain Kirk like he basically needs to overthrow the order of things.
That's right.
Because it's not right now. And I like that it's still coming from his imperative as a doctor to do that.
Right, and there's a twist on the good old Captain Kirk trope where, you know, the computer is telling people to do things, and so Captain Kirk destroys the computer and says your civilization is stupid and now you're free. But the computer.
Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. Bye. I'm leaving. The computer is a tool for the hospital administrator. He's the real, I don't want to call him an enemy, but he's kind of the
villain.
He's the bad guy in this episode. Yeah. And he's the one that the doctor doesn't hack into the computer. He does actually hack into the computer, but that's not his solution to like change the allocator. And then he leaves. He knows that he has to change the hospital administrator's mind, and the way he chooses to do that is interesting and unethical, because he basically shoots him full of a disease and makes the allocator think that he is the young child who died. Oh, I guess he's not. He's like a preteen kid who died of this disease that was curable. They have a cure for it, but they had to allocate that cure also, as we said earlier, improves your heart by 40%, and it prolongs your life by 40%. So if you're healthy, so they just shoot healthy, important people full of it and let little ragamuffins die.
Yeah, they have like 12 people dying downstairs who could be easily saved by the stuff that they're saving for the valuable people to extend their life upstairs. And that kid's really, it's also interesting. I like the little twist that the kid is not important because he's not very helpful. And then when the doctor saves him, he starts to help around the around the hospital and says, please don't send me home because they're just going to make me do my terrible work or whatever, and I could stay here and help other patients. And they don't do a lot with that, but I like that suggestion that it turns out he has value that the computer isn't seeing or the society isn't seeing, that he could help people in the hospital too. He could maybe even be a doctor or a nurse or some other kind of helper in the hospital, but he's been coded as being worthless, and so he's just, that's it.
He's just gonna die.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. So the doctor basically kidnaps the hospital administrator and pumps him full of disease. when you say it like that, it seems like the wrong choice.
It's literally, you know, this kid who died because of you. I have his blood here and I'm injecting it in you so you die too. That is what the doctor does in this episode.
Yes. And I do like the ending where he says, hey, 7 of 9, could you check my holo matrix?
Yeah. Was I malfunctioning? And she's like, nope. And he's like, oh, boy. You gotta live with it. Well, it's the, and I like that the doctor down there in the red zone or whatever it is mm-hmm. aghast that he's harming this guy, because, and he's right, like you said,
yes,
you know, doctors like us, we do no harm. And he's like, yeah, I'm trying to overthrow a society here, I've got to break the prime directive. He's right. I mean, yeah, it's the same deal.
He's triaging these things in his mind, and so he has to overrule his, like, the basic tenet of his programming, which is the Hippocratic Oath. He will save more people doing it this way than otherwise. At least he thinks he will. And I guess at the end he does. But so before that, he basically steals medicine from the blue zone to help the kid on the red zone. And then he decides, and the doctor in the red zone is like, this is great. You should get me more medicine and we can heal even more people. And the doctor's like, okay. And so he does. And then, you know, the repercussions are that the hospital administrator knew about it, and he basically, the allocator has said, oh, all this medicine has been applied to these 12 people, and they have now met their yearly quota of medicine.
Yeah. It's like they've literally reached their insurance's lifetime limit, and so they can't get any follow-up treatment, so they're all going to die because you need more treatments. And that was another little resonant moment of like, oh my God, the lifetime cap has been hit. No.
Sorry, go home. Yeah, and then so the kid dies from a simple infection, basically, and then they're going to send these 11 people home because their premiums, they can't cover what they need, so they got to go home.
And Gregory, I like right in there, Gregory Itzen, the doctor on the blue level, has that nice back and forth. That's where he explains like mm-hmm. How to get around bureaucracy and like, no, but this is good because then you use it and then your budget goes up and they see that you need more resources and next month you get more resources. And he's like, cheating is good for my patients. Then I will cheat some more. And it's like a really nice moment.
Tell me more of this cheating.
And then that working the system.
That's right. That pays off later when the doctor has kidnapped the hospital administrator, pumped him full of the dead kid's blood, put him through the little diagnosis arc that tells him that he's got this disease. And then the administrator's like, well, give me, I know we have the cure, so give it to me. And the doctor's like, well, the allocator says that you reached your lifetime limit, so I can't give you any. The other doctor, the red zone doctor, is like, well, there's not much I could do. I can't override it. And the administrator says, but I can override it. But the allocator doesn't think he's the administrator. Yeah. What's going to happen?
And then get the other guy from the blue zone. Get him down here.
That's right. And you think, oh, he'll probably bust this up. But no, he doesn't.
No. The doctor's gotten to him too.
That's right. And he's like, you know what? I don't know if we have enough medicine to save you.
No, and they come up with this plan, which is, but what if we transferred all the people down here mm-hmm. up to the blue level where we do have the medicine, and then they would be blue level patients and they could get the medicine.
That's right.
And my budget would be better because I'd be treating more people, so it's good for me. And that's when Larry Drake's like, yeah, it's fine. And literally the Voyager crew members beam in at this point, and the doctor's like, but hold on, I got this.
Yeah.
I'll be right with you.
Give me a minute. I'm not quite done destabilizing there.
I don't even know why they're there. Yeah.
He does not need saving at this point. He is
no.
He's like 2 hours away from being the hospital administrator and just taking over everything.
At one point, I was hoping that this episode was in two different timelines, to the point where when Voyager finally arrives at the end of the episode, the doctor would answer and he would have already completely changed the entire culture and everybody's healthy. And he's like, "I'm ready to be picked up. It's fine. I took care of it."
Let's go.
That's almost what happens. Just not quite, but it's close.
Yeah, not quite. And so he goes back to Voyager. Everybody's happy. They save the hospital administrator, one assumes, and he's fine. And I think that is and there is a funny moment where Voyager hails the hospital ship, and the computer, the allocator, responds that only the hospital administrator is authorized to talk to aliens, and he is, we don't know where he is.
he's dying.
He's dying, but he doesn't say that. But the Memory Alpha tells me that the computer, the allocator voice, yes, is the voice of Kit, good old William Daniels, which I did not recognize.
I'm watching this episode, and they talk to the computer, and I think, is that Kit? No, that can't be Kit. And then I looked on Memory Alpha and I thought, oh my God, it totally was Kit. That is such a great Easter egg that because if you're going to get somebody to do a talking computer voice, why would you not get William Daniels? Because then everybody can go, it's Kit. It totally is Kit. Yeah. Another
it is
great
totally
little moment.
Kit. I love it.
I was just going to say the Voyager side of this, there's almost nothing interesting that happens other than the phone call with a girlfriend, which is really funny. We should mention.
Oh, I guess the worm.
While the doctor,
wood or whatever.
Well, yeah, while the doctor is doing his unethical thing, more unethical things are happening on Voyager, because when they get this roguish traitor guy to get him to tell him what he knows, first Tuvok says, "Well, you could tell me, or I can mind meld it out of you." And he's like, "Oh," and then Neelix comes in with a bowl of soup and says, "Hold my beer." Gives him the bowl of soup and says, "Eat up." And he starts to eat. And he says, "Oh yeah, that's going to make you violently ill for a long time. But I've got a cure. If you tell us, otherwise you're just going to get really, really sick." And Tuvok's like aghast, like, that is against Starfleet regulations. And in a moment of one just wonderful moment from Neelix looks at Tuvok and says, "I heard something about a mind meld." And then that's it. It's like they're both complicit in this, basically torturing a prisoner in order to mm-hmm. get him to reveal the location of the doctor. So they are also kind of going to extreme measures here. It's not just the doctor. In fact, the vibe of both of those scenes made me look up when this episode aired, and it aired in 2000. That's when Voyager went off the air, was at the beginning of 2001. Because I read this and I thought, this would be really interesting if this aired sort of like 6 months after 9/11, because mm-hmm. those are the kind of conversations we were having. But again, a little ahead of its time.
Yes, and I was legitimately shocked when Tuvok said, "I can mind meld you," because, you know, being a Star Trek geek, the Vulcans place so much emphasis on consent and how, you know, intimate and potentially, what a violation it is to perform a mind meld on an unwilling person. And I was like, Tuvok, what's going on?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they really want the doctor back, I guess. So,
yeah. And then we should say then the episode ends abruptly. I mean, like, literally, they show up. And the doctor's like, but I got this. He solves the problem. They're like, they're going to take everybody upstairs. And cut to, we're on Voyager. Everybody's back to normal. The end.
That's true.
It's just, yep. Or you know, Seven, he asks Seven if he's malfunctioning and she says no. And he's like, oh, I guess I'm going to have to live with what I did with my actions. And that's it. We don't get like any more follow up on that. And Voyager, like, basically the episode is Voyager's trying to, it's kind of funny because they're following a trail of clues, but it's not boring. It's just not as interesting as the Doctor's dilemma on his hospital ship, I think.
But overall, I think, I don't know if it is because of the current healthcare debate that's going on as we record this, or because I'm just slowly liking Voyager more, but I did enjoy this episode, and I thought that it made some interesting points. It made me think a little bit more about healthcare, more than I have been. Ugh, I'd rather not think about healthcare. But you know, it also made me think of the whole idea of triage and how you prioritize people and you have limited resources and the repercussions of thinking of healthcare as a business and all that. So, thought provoking.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is one of those that maybe if Joe Steele revisited it today, he might find it a little more resonant than whenever he saw it and thought that it wasn't very good. Because I like the some of the actors in it. I like lots of Robert Picardo. I think the beef plot is inoffensive, and and I agree with you. It is the kind of thought-provoking social commentary that I love to see in Star Trek.
Yes, there is very little. There are no phasers being shot. There are no chase scenes. There is a kidnapping and poisoning, basically. But you know,
there's like an ejection, but that's about it.
And I did liked the red zone doctor a lot. He's just trying to do his job. He wants to save people, but he can't. The allocator won't let him. I like the blue zone doctor, and they were both kind of dealing with the same problem, like the opposite ends of the same problem, right? They both have patients that they want to help.
They're both doctors. There are no evil doctors in this episode. They're just doctors trying to do their jobs, right? It's again coming from a doctor, James Caan. It's not surprising, but right. it's the bureaucrats who are.
They don't know what they're talking about. Those bastards. And I imagine if it was written today, there probably would be a little bit more about, you know, the cost of the drugs and things, since everybody likes to beat up on the pharmaceutical companies.
I think you could argue that if you did this today also, you just take the Voyager out of it. Like there's like a scene for every episode, for every actor on the ship, but it's just like, it's not necessary. It'd be much better if this was all Doctor and at the end he fixes it and calls Voyager to pick him up,
right?
Because it would give them even more time to kind of explore this setup that they're in, because it's really interesting and the Voyager stuff is not necessary.
But you know what couldn't have been done without you, Jason, joining me on this episode. See, that's a professional podcaster segue.
You've come so far. Yes, thank you for inviting me back on Random Trek. I look forward to my next visit. I've had three different series, so who knows what Deep Space Nine or Enterprise episode awaits me in the future.
Who knows? Only the allocator knows.
Oh, the allocator.